Hello, listeners. Just a quick apology for this podcast turning up in your feed 24 hours later than expected. It's entirely my fault. I was gigging in Vienna for the weekend and assumed that an Airbnb in the city that regularly comes number one on the highest standard of living index would have better internet connection than it actually did. But turns up, no. At least that's in theme with this podcast. Anyway, on with the show. And I'm not going to say roll music, I'm going to say roll me and Barry.
Hello, listeners. Before you listen to this week's episode with Bex Lindsay about the world's worst toy, we've got a suggestion for you.
Yes, we do. We've noticed on our own social medias, we've got a lot of pals going, I've listened to all the big boys' podcasts, your Serials and your Comedians, and your My Dad Wrote a Porno, and they're going, we've exhausted this, what else can we listen to? Well, guys, you know what's coming next? Us! So, if you've got a pal saying that, why not let them know about it on Facebook or Twitter and tag us in? Probably the best way to do it, pick one of your favourite episodes. We've got over 85 to pick from.
I'm closing in on 100.
Yes. Yeah. We're waiting to get the applause from the pavilion.
Yeah, if you haven't got a favourite, Jess, we're not doing our job.
So, do that. Tag us in to one of your pals, recommend an episode, and help us grow our audience of listeners.
Yeah, because the more people subscribe, the more visibility we get. So if you can convert one of your friends, that's one more member of our weird cult.
Yeah, and as you'll have heard last week, we are currently big in Qatar.
Yes.
Tomorrow, Abu Dhabi, and then the world. Now, as ever, onwards with the daft music and some really creepy toys.
Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry Maxtay, and each week I, my co-host and our guest, propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. We are reaching into the toy box to see what world's worst toys we can find. We've come across some building blocks, but we don't have the planning permission certificate required to actually stack them. There's the Jack in a Box, a wooden container whose doors splinter to reveal Jack Nicholson in full Here's Johnny mode. There's the yo-yo, a piece of string attached to internationally renowned cellist Yo-Yo Ma. Every time he tries to escape, you pull him right back to you. And there's the Magic 8-Ball, which has a street value of at least 200 quid, but I know a guy. And with me is my very own action man, but one that's missing an arm, has a cracked head, and has had genitals drawn on in crayons. It's Ben Vandervelt.
As soon as you said action man, I was like, where is the genital joke coming?
It came out of the crayon box.
Yeah, it did.
Burnt sienna.
which is, of course, my burlesque name when I was a child, along with crayoned genitals, which was the rather darker one. Did you ever have an action man?
Nope.
What was your most
loved? Toys. We had loads of Lego. We'd like a big, like, probably 2 foot square, 2 foot cube box that had just loads and loads of Lego in it, and then so we'd build like Lego castles and forts and things, and we had a few toy soldiers, so then we'd put them in the Lego castles we'd built and use discarded batteries as ammunition and fired the batteries at the Lego castles and knocked them down, and whoever knocked the other person's soldiers down first won. That was myself and my brother played.
Wow, that is really detailed warfare.
And then we bought, then Mum gave us some discarded Tupperware boxes, which became very controversially designated as force fields, which you could put on top of certain areas of your soldiers and battlefield. But because they were so, force fields very resistant to battery ammunition, they just became a very unfair way of going, well, I've got one soldier under this who you're never going to knock over.
I think a Tupperware force field is the most middle class thing I've ever heard.
What about you? Did you have any dolls or interesting toys?
What did I have? Well, there was, I think, Peter and Sausage Dog, who lived next door with our next door neighbour, who were some sort of bear and a sausage dog.
A bear keeping a pet of his own?
Yeah.
Wow, lovely.
I also had an enormous panda. Like an enormous panda that when I was a child was really well looked after, and when I became a teenager and I'm still in the house, got violated by a number of different friends of mine.
Poor Panda.
Poor Panda. And then just an assortment box of different toys that had to be involved in theatrical productions that they weren't prepared for. Yeah. Like, He-Man does not make a good Othello.
Yeah.
Right, business. We need to introduce our guest this week. She is a broadcaster on Fun Kids, a national radio station for children. And her show, The Bin Weevils Show, that's a title that is going to require some explaining, recently won an Arkiva Award for Innovation in Radio. It has taken all around the country and allowed her to interview such great luminaries of British modern life as Steve Backshall and Rowan Atkinson. And also take her place in the Guinness Book of Records for breaking the record for the most people singing on a live radio broadcast.
Oh, cool.
Yes, I know. She is both smashy and nicey at the same time. It is the lovely Bex Lindsay. Hello, Bex.
Hello, thanks for having me.
That's very
our pleasure.
My favourite thing about your show is it's the drive time show. I'm imagining kids in like little soapbox carts driving around.
It's those little red toy cars with the yellow roofs.
How many people broke your record?
I think it was about 10,000.
Also, where were they singing?
It was in Hyde Park. So it was the most petrifying day of my life because
the
British Summertime Festival.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was the family day and we were meant to be in like 10 minutes, get in, do this thing. We're singing Frozen, Let It Go.
Yeah.
Bish, bash, bosh, done.
With the Guinness Book adjudicator there and everything.
Yeah, lovely lady called Fortune. She was brilliant. And all these people in the audience and me and my co-host were like, sweet. Let's get it done. Brilliant. We got there and the connection to the radio station wasn't working, which is crucially the main thing you need for that record.
For a live broadcast.
So we ended up riffing on stage for 25 minutes until the last 5 minutes when it actually worked.
Oh,
that is world-class broadcasting, Rebecca.
It was petrifying. So we
even more petrified because you've got an audience full of kids and their parents going, if you drop the ball at any point and these get bored, there's going to be a riot.
Well, we knew that we were like, okay, we've got kids and we've got families, and we did a lot of cheer if you like this, cheer if you like this, and then splitting the audience in half and doing like, you guys cheer, and you can be Team Bex, you can be Team Sean.
So you filled with market research.
Basically, yes. And our bosses were delighted.
So Bex, we always ask people on this podcast, what are they worst at in the world?
There were so many things I could have picked for this. I went for, I'm the worst at finishing things. So
you're speaking to my soul, yes.
So if we get halfway through the podcast and you just up and leave.
Yeah, you'll know why. Like literally even halfway through thinking like this was a really good one, I just started thinking about something else and how I'm terrible at like avoiding, say, saying no to chocolate was my other thing. And I was like, no, come back to the finishing things. I have so many projects that I just haven't finished. Like I've like written half of two books.
Could you put them together to make one book?
It would be a very confusing one.
It would be like the world's easiest but weirdest choose your own adventure. Like it starts in 18th century England and then suddenly you're in 25th century sci-fi fantasy.
But sometime you'd have a lovely journey. You know, you'd really enjoy it. I can't finish conversations. Like text messages, emails. The only thing I can finish is like bags of chocolate. That's literally it.
Nice.
I love that you work for a children's radio station and you clearly have the attention span of a child.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I am with my audience there. Like, that's why all of our links are relatively short. And some presenters do like quite like to talk, you know, like at least 2 minute long.
Yeah.
And for me, like 15 seconds, I'm out. Like that's me done.
I need some advertising just to distract me.
I need some Taylor Swift. Play her quick. Next thing. Yeah, absolutely. Like, finishing things, I find, I don't know what it is. I like starting projects. But finishing them is just hard work, isn't it?
Yeah, well, no, that's it. No, starting things...
It's very
things,
scary.
It is. I mean, it's a bit like... I mean, I don't want to get too deep on this, but it's a bit like relationships. The bit at the beginning, oh, it's full of the adrenaline and the excitement of someone new, and then you've got to go, oh, I'm going to have to live with you for a while now.
Or host a podcast with them.
Yeah. The effect's going, I've just arrived, this is lovely.
I set this off, yeah.
Episode 90, Bex, 90.
First up, I don't know, I never had really any collectibles. Like my brother grew up in the era of Star Wars, and I'm pretty certain he had like box fresh Luke Skywalkers, and I think my mum might...
Huh? Great, get them sold.
Oh, I think my mum threw them away.
Oh, no!
Yeah, I know. But I have discovered what I think is the worst action figure. Far and away, you know what this is, don't you?
Yes.
This is for fans of 2001 A Space Odyssey. You can get an action figure of the Monolith.
Yeah, you can.
I've never seen this film.
Oh, okay.
I'm so sorry.
So you might recognise, so very famously in 2001, there is just this large concrete slab that is like a few metres high, and it's
black and very imposing. And right. You have the soundtrack, all that happening.
That was Superman.
That was Mastermind, is what that was.
Yeah, you're right.
That would be amazing if they did a cut of it. And it just turns around and Magnuson is there, dressed as an ape.
Yeah.
And I think it's meant to be that it was placed on Earth by alien beings, and it's used as a Stargate at the end. The Act 3 of 2001 is very trippy. Mm. But anyway, you can, of all the things you could own, a Han Solo, or you could own a Wonder Woman, or you could own an Indiana Jones. No, this is a tiny version of a giant black concrete slab, and it just looks like a tiny bit of chocolate.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's about the size of a playing card.
Yes. It measures approximately 0.75 inches by 3 by 0.67 inches.
And it doesn't do anything. It doesn't, like, open up.
No. It feels like a kissing cousin of the No Phone Zero.
Yes, which we talked about. Yeah,
which is the world's worst gadget
had
on, that is just it's the size and shape of a phone, but it's not a phone. It's just a block of plastic.
Just sit in your pocket and reassure you.
Oh, right, to make you feel better about your life. Yeah, yeah.
Did you read the product description of it?
No, for it.
This is available. So this thing is available on Amazon. You can order it and it'll arrive to you tomorrow for £21.99.
Worth it.
Plus postage and packaging.
Yes. And it's it's described as follows. With 0 points of articulation, it is properly proportioned to those monoliths in the movies 1 to 4 to 9, which are the squares of the first three integers, for fans and nerds out there.
Wow.
Made of semi-synthetic organic amorphous solid materials, aka plastic, may cause strange magnetic fields, action figure evolution, seeing things filled with stars, and or more, brackets, or it might just sit in your desk doing nothing.
That is, you are a black belt level geek if you own one of these.
Oh, absolutely. I also read some of the customer reviews.
Go on.
One star. Avoid like the plague spelt incorrectly. The most appalling piece of rubbish I've ever purchased in my entire life. Not even as big as a playing card, badly made, overpriced, not worth £2. I'm ashamed of myself for buying this piece of utter rubbish. However, counterbalance that with 5 stars. We are not worthy. I was delighted when this turned up at my door. Since rushing out to stroke it, I've discovered fire, learned how to eat meat, killed the big cats which used to eat my family, and, best of all, I have murdered that bastard from next door who used to pee in my waterhole. And I now know a catchy tune. My one regret is that I am now barred from visiting Europa, which I'd hoped to do before Brexit.
Guys, Bex's face was a mask of incomprehension through that final review.
But someone at home has got to be absolutely wetting themselves.
Yeah, that is superb.
I mean, somebody was just having a lovely time. I mean, you guys were, obviously, but also the person writing the review was having a lovely time. That makes no sense to me, but I quite enjoy it. I like the fact that somebody would buy it thinking it would do, like, the one-star review, like, why... What do you think was going to happen? Like, obviously nothing was going to happen when you got it through your door.
Yeah,
like,
the product description is so tongue-in-cheek, I can't imagine why you would think of doing anything apart from just be a desk, like, ornament at
obviously.
Best.
Unless you're going to build your own prehistoric Earth and have, like, monkey figures on your desk and then, like, make a tiny little femur bone and throw it up in the air
for
it to turn into a
like
space
a little Warhammer
station.
Landscape that you can put it on.
Yeah, precisely. Mm. Yeah, again, Bex, not a clue. But
it sounds very good, though.
Next up is, it's another action figure, and it is of Jack Nicholson in The Shining. And
No, not really.
I was just going through the Kubrick stuff.
Wow. Yeah. I thought I'd read your mind in my intro.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's
got a doll with its eyes wide shut.
I found just a couple of weird things. Firstly, from Japan, obviously. There is Yumi-chan, which is a child that you can make cry by injecting its arm with a syringe full of water.
What? No.
Yeah.
So it goes into its arm and then comes out its eyes? Like,
yeah,
how
pretty
is
much.
That?
Wow. So, like, because you've just taken your baby for his inoculations recently, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
How did that go?
Do you know what? He took him like a champ.
Did he cry the MMR back out of his eyes?
as we wanted him to do. No, he had the best thing in the
that
world.
That would be the best for the anti-vaxxers, wouldn't it? Okay, I'll come and get him inoculated just so long as he can immediately quiet back out again.
He's got the enormous welt on his arm now. Yeah. It didn't appear for 4 to 6 weeks, and now he's got this really enticing pussy volcano. Another burlesque name. Yes. on his arm. Like, just every time I change his nappy, I'm like, oh, what a squeeze your arm. But yeah. I won't, because that's irresponsible parenting.
Yes.
I think it's for the best if you don't. Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Please
don't
right.
do that. Also, please don't inject. Like, why would you inject a baby toy with... What? That is mental.
Yeah.
That's not...
I love it. There are so many of those toys that are like, oh, here, inject your child, or your child's going to fart or poo, or
that's bizarre.
Your child is terminally ill. There's a doll for everything.
There really are. There's lots to, like, obviously, you know, the crying dolls or the ones that we.
Yeah.
But, like, it is weird to have to inject it.
Yeah,
that's the thing
that freaks
me out. To
literally do it as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Because usually, like, the medical ones are like, oh, take their temperature with a thermometer in the mouth or something like that.
But
is as far as it goes, yeah.
Yeah, they are. But this one, I don't know. I sort of feel like they were like, how can we solve this problem nice and quickly? I know. Mm. This is how to get the water from point A to point B as quickly as possible. There's also a sewable amputee doll.
Oh, I saw that.
No.
Which
yeah.
I couldn't decide whether it was actually in really nice taste, and it was a really good thing for if you're a child who's unlucky enough to have a limb removed.
Yeah.
Then... you know, maybe that's a good thing.
So you could, hang on, you could take off its limbs or add limbs to it, or like, how
did
it
come
work?
With them off, I think, and you could sew them back
yes.
on, and then you could rip them off again and sew them back on again.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on there to pull up that thread. Like, does your kid want to hurt a child and you're just giving it a toy to do it with?
It sounds like a bit like My Little Voodoo. Put a relative's face on the head and then
just rip
have
it apart.
At you. Yeah, yeah.
And then when they're nice, you just tie it back together.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the third one I found, and I can't quite remember its name, but there is a prank toy of a run-over cat.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it.
I think I've seen that as well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if it's a prank, and it's basically, it's got a green tyre mark across its midriff,
yeah, yeah.
And then its viscera spread out
yeah.
beneath it. But it is so obviously a knitted cat.
Yeah, it doesn't look convincing in any way.
No, not at all. We're going to come back to dolls, because my actual suggestion is the doll, but a brief little tour on a couple of other things. Jack in the Boxes, which
oh,
I've
fun.
always found a little bit sinister.
They're sort of the stereotypical, oh, you're in a haunted child's bedroom, creepy toy is
yeah.
going to be.
Yeah.
You're
going to
have,
yeah.
like, monkey with cymbals and Jack in a Box.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
I forgot about monkey with cymbals.
Monkey with cymbals as a Jack in a Box.
Oh.
Get the hell out of there, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
You are going to die.
Yeah.
And it's always the monkey with the cymbals who goes off first.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. With, like, wildly smiling, like, big, like, always teeth and smile. It's never, like, a morose monkey with cymbals. They're always really happy to have their cymbals.
Yeah, because they've got cymbals. What monkey yeah. wouldn't be happy? They're delighted.
Do you think if monkeys got, if they got, like, what's the word I want? Never mind, I can't think of the word. You think if monkeys got opposable thumbs that they'd instantly start, like, learning other instruments? Like, monkey with a harpsichord.
Just a great cellist monkey. Just yeah. really, really, really good. Can hit those top notes.
I think monkeys belong in the percussion section. That's where that's what we are. But they, like, they play the...
What? You wouldn't like to see a bassoon with a baboon? No, damn it, wrong way round. A baboon with a bassoon.
Is that, like, the difference of an elf on a shelf?
Yes.
Which is also a terrible toy, by the way.
It is also an evil toy.
Yeah.
Evil, evil toy. Do you know where...
A macaque with maracas.
A what with maracas?
A macaque with maracas.
Macaque.
A bonobo with an oboe.
Yes, please. Why have you not made these already? Why have I not arrived here and you've, like, provided me with them?
I'm so sorry.
This isn't... No, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Patent it immediately.
Yeah, I'm done now.
You're done now. Good, good. Do you know where people think that the Jack in the Box comes from?
Is it some sort of superstitious thing?
Sort of, because it comes from, we believe, 14th century English prelate Sir John Shawn, who basically is often pictured...
I think they say prelate.
It's not my religion, mate.
Okay,
no, he's a prelate. He's what you
so
get...
on time.
He's,
yeah. Yeah. He's a very punctual vicar. Sir John Shawn, who's often pictured holding a boot with a devil in it.
Oh, wow.
And according to folklore, he once cast the devil into a boot to protect the village of North Marston in Buckinghamshire.
Oh.
And in French, a jack-in-the-box is literally called a diable en boîte, literally a devil in a boot.
Oh.
So that's a fun little fact about a classic toy for you there.
Nice.
One final thing before we go down into the Valley of the Dolls. I discovered a really creepy thing from the 18th century. There was a German toy which used a live bird inside of it to make an automata work.
So it would
be like an automaton of like a comic figure from stories, probably from Grimm fairy tales, with a hollow space inside it. And what you would open up this hollow space, pop a live bird inside, and as the bird struggled to get out, that would make the mechanism work so the automaton would move.
Oh. How would you get the bird? Was it provided with the toy? Do you have to go and catch
Birds
a bird?
Not included.
Yeah.
That would be so, like,
imagine they get different sizes of, like, you have A and double A and triple A batteries and like C, so okay, this one is a really small one, so you can use like a linnet, and then this one's, you need a pheasant for this one to work.
Mum, have we got any peregrine falcons?
I got a starling. I'm gonna have to go out and get a smaller
No, but the starlings, you fold the wings and you line them all up together like double A batteries.
You have to get them the right way around though.
Yeah. So
one with its head up and then the tail up.
Such a stupid toy.
They used to run their cars off ostriches. For the really big car battery size.
Yeah, yeah. Which is good renewable energy.
Yeah.
Well, also it's really useful because if you have a burst of tyre, you can use the ostrich as a jack, just with its neck.
I think we're just writing an episode of the Flintstones now, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, yes, we absolutely are. Well, birds were related to dinosaurs, so of course we were.
There we go.
But I decided to look into dolls because I find dolls super creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a fear of dolls is pediophobia, classified under the broader fear of humanoid figures, which is automatonophobia, related, of course, to pupophobia, which is a fear of puppets.
Of course.
First, freaky dolls. Do you know what's odd about Amish dolls?
That they aren't allowed to be played with.
Nope.
Are they wooden?
Nope.
They not allowed, not even allowed to have buttons. You rip the buttons off on a Sunday in case you use them.
Ripping's not allowed on a Sunday.
Not allowed on
That's like harvesting.
It's nope. 22.
Amish dolls don't have a face.
Oh.
Because
is it idolatry?
Sort of. Basically, it's to emphasise the fact that everyone is alike in the eyes of God.
No. Okay.
So it's that sort of thing. And also that because God is the great creator, and I think the face is the most creative part of the human, or the most unique part of a human.
Right.
That's so, like, the least fun. Like, how can we make dolls not fun? Like, just take away any humanity about it at all.
Yeah. Well, I've seen pictures of Amish dolls, and the thing is, they've still got quite a lot of personalities. They've got the straw hat and the big sort of Emmerdale beard.
Oh, so the men then?
The men then, yeah. No, there's women's one, okay, as well. With
kind
of
beards. Beards.
Yeah, with the beards and a bonnet, but just like a faceless doll, like a Doctor Who villain.
Okay.
So they're pretty creepy.
Yeah, yeah.
There's also a type of China doll, and I do find like China or the not pottery dolls, porcelain.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The
porcelain
dolls. They
are dolls.
Back with those monkeys and the symbols, aren't
they? Yeah.
Yeah.
They live in the same horror movie.
Because they've got that sort of uncanny valley look to their
yes,
eyes and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there was a type called the Frozen Charlotte, which was made from the middle of the 19th century to the beginning of the 20th. And the name originates from the American folk ballad Fair Charlotte, based on a poem called A Corpse Going to a Ball, which tells the story of a young girl who refused to wrap up warmly to go on a sleigh ride because she didn't want to cover up her pretty dress, and she freezes to death during the journey.
That sounds like the work in progress version of Why Didn't the Skeleton Go to the Ball?
Yeah.
Working towards that punchline.
Yeah, and they're these tiny little, like, white frozen figures, and they would be sold, and they're only about, you know, an inch to 12 inches long, and they would be sold in like these little bathtubs very often.
Okay.
So they would look like a dead body in a bathtub.
What?
And weirdly, they would very often be used as charms inside Christmas puddings as well.
Oh, cool.
That's so Victorian, like...
bury a child.
Yeah, to bury a dead frozen child inside a Christmas pudding. Dickens would love that.
The Victorians did have a thing, I think, of making stuff creepy that shouldn't be creepy, especially toys. Like, there's a load of toys from the Victorian era. You're like, why did you make this not fun?
Yeah, yeah.
How did you do this? How did you break fun?
Toys really get religion during the Victorian age.
Yeah, they do.
While.
Yeah,
it's really weird.
Yeah, it was like it's all about austerity, Rebecca.
Yes,
that
it's
is,
true.
An Englishman or English woman does not enjoy fun and ribaldry.
It should be educational toys.
Yes, absolutely, and should all have frilly little coverings on their ankles in case anyone gets aroused. I'm going to tell you about my choice because it's awful. It's a reborn doll.
Oh, no.
Oh, God, what?
A reborn doll is a manufactured skin doll that has been transformed by an artist to resemble a human infant with as much realism as possible. You are right, just so you know, listeners, Barry looks absolutely horrified. Mm. There's an amazing Dutch artist, I think he's called Ron Muick, who, M-U-E-C-K.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Bless you.
And he makes incredibly lifelike figurines. And he's done like one of a fallen angel, which is like an old man with a beard naked with angel wings out the back. Uh-huh. And he's made ones of like a 25-foot newborn baby. Just they're astonishing things. These are as lifelike, but they're not made by a wonderful Dutch artist looking at the fragility of human life. They're made by creepy fucking collectors who like to take babies and put them together piece by piece by piece.
Little Frankenstein dolls.
Little Frankenstein dolls, but they all come as a kit, and sometimes they are based on real children.
Oh.
So the kit is made of what? Like, what is the stuff made of?
It is made of mohair, human hair for wigs. It's made of a sort of acetate substance for the skin. The eyeballs are made of... I've forgotten the name of it. But again,
to be honest, just using the phrase, the eyeballs are made of, immediately. Yeah. That's enough. That's
So yeah, vinyl doll parts as well are a large part of it. You can even get a model called a preemie, which models a premature baby. And then if you want to end up in a really creepy world, there are competitions for the most lifelike baby.
Yeah.
And there are people who have made, like, Harry Potter babies. And they've made Gollum babies. And they've made Superman babies. You can go on a website and there's a little picture of this little scrunched up infant with the Harry Potter scar on it. And other people rating and reviewing it to see who's made the best, like, reborn doll.
Right.
Now...
So you order this kit and it arrives and it's just all the body parts.
Yeah.
And then you put them all together.
Do you like sew it together? Like you kind of, was it like the insides and the outsides or like?
And can you like adapt it a little bit? Like you say, it's a Harry Potter thing, so you can make changes to it and all of that.
Or... Yeah. So the way it works is that you can pick different brands to best suit the doll that you want to create.
Okay.
You can buy reborn doll kits that are sculpted by reborn sculpt artists. They can buy a kit containing Adam, designed by Mary,
right,
and then reborn by Barry.
Right.
So the baby is called Adam.
Yes.
It was designed by Mary, and it's remade by you.
Okay.
And it may or may not be based on a real baby. It may or may not be based on a fictional baby. But the whole point is to make it look as real as possible. Now, some reborners are women who've maybe lost babies.
Uh-huh.
And there are, or have lost children, there are some psychologists who say, hey, it can, like, sort of replace that. But the overwhelming opinion of the psychological community is this is not healthy.
No.
It is just super creepy. But most reborners aren't women who've lost children. Most reborners are women who like to purchase, build, and collect incredibly lifelike babies.
And then show them at shows.
Yeah.
It's weird because I get arts and crafts, but just go and do some papier-mâché or something. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Go and do some macrame, just don't make a baby. That seems weird.
There are easier ways, well, there's more fun ways to make babies.
Yes, there are. I didn't think anything could get creepier than child beauty pageants. But these are
fake child beauty pageants. Fake,
yeah.
I'll show you the website after the recording and I'll put a link to it on our website. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Because also, I guess it is a toy. It's, an adult toy, a grown-up toy, but it's just the idea of having to make it and then judge it as well. There's something so awful about all of that.
Mm. Yeah, it's the, like looking at them, we talked about the Uncanny Valley before, and they are right in the, I don't know whether it's the bottom of the Uncanny Valley or making its way out. Remember, they're right on the cusp of emerging from the Uncanny Valley. Obviously, when you see the Harry Potter one, you're like, that's not real. But there's some of them, they've really nailed it.
Yeah.
What would they do with them? Would they, like, hold them and look after them as if they were real babies? Like, would they play with them like they're toys, almost?
I don't know. I think... I mean, listen, either of the options are awful. Either they nurse it like it's a real child, or they put it in the baby cabinet.
Down another route entirely with my search.
That's just as well.
Probably for the best. So I went more traditional, conventional. I didn't go historical or creepy, apparently.
Mm.
I've categorised mine into certain sections. So first of all, I will tell you the most boring toys I found.
Great.
So I went for, just out of interest, I thought you'd like to know, you can get a children's ATM machine. You can get a children's airport scanner.
Amazing.
You can get a kid's cleaning trolley, so little girls can pretend to be cleaners. That's helpful.
Amazing.
My favourite was a fish cleaning set, which is a fish you can, it's plastic fish you can take apart.
Oh, the one that you can, like, gut.
Yeah, you can see the bones, yeah, and you can learn how to gut a fish, basically.
Yes. Because what child doesn't think? That's the first thing they want to do.
All of our listeners, all I get every week is, Bex, tell us about the fish cleaning set. Yeah. So that's the main thing I get. Annoying toys I found were quite recent normally. Fidget spinners.
Yeah.
Always annoying. Loom bands. They were big a few years ago.
What's a loom band?
So yeah. It's like you, tiny little pieces of plastic, like tiny plastic, rubber bands that you would make into bracelets and rings.
So you'd sort of twist them around each other and make these elaborate designs, didn't you?
Yeah, and I was awful at it, and I kept, because of our radio station, I just kept getting given them.
Yeah.
So I got given a loom band kit and had to make them, and I was like, I've no idea what I'm doing. I just donated them to a local child. I was like, here you go.
Because in a world of, you know, all, so much plastic in the seas and in the landfills, what we need is more stupid plastic band-based toys.
I still find them now in my pocket every now and again. I'm like, what? How is this still here? What is this? Obviously, from when I was little, there's Tamagotchis. Also, do you remember those alien things that were in little egg?
Oh, yeah, that you grow.
Yeah, it would have, like, goo and then an alien inside it. And then when I was little, you were told that the alien might give birth to another alien if you kept it warm.
Yeah.
And it never did. So I had this alien for, like, a good 2 years, thinking, any minute now, baby. Never had a
baby. We don't know
baby.
The gestation period of aliens, I suppose. That's the problem.
You know what? It may still be, like, ready to go right now. It's probably somewhere in my room at home being like, I'm going to get, gonna have a baby.
Imagine the kid. There's some kid around the world who has a My Little Caesarian pack. I'm going in. I'm getting that baby out of there.
You've got, like, Furbies, which I find personally the most annoying of all toys in the world.
They came back, didn't they?
They came, oh, yeah.
Like 2 years ago or so.
So we, on Fun Kids, we did, like, kind of a toy section where we got to play with lots of new toys. And Furbies were one of the ones we did. And first of all, just annoying voice. Secondly, would not stop to the point where we nearly had to bash it over the head to get it. Like, there was a point.
Yeah, any toy where you have to do that, why won't you die?
It was weird. Like, even taking out the batteries, the little part of it was like, mwah, mwah, because it controlled.
I would love to watch the YouTube video of you curb stamping a Furby.
that was a particular low light for us, yeah. Because it's now connected to iPods or iPads.
Yeah.
It
so they can sing, they can play music and stuff as well.
Yeah. And it, like, for somehow, like, sucks out battery from life forms around it. So it super annoying. Another toy we had was an ice cream machine, but like a tiny little kid's ice cream machine that we did very badly with.
Oh, yeah.
And it basically ended up with salty cream, which is because salt kind of makes it colder and quicker, and it was disgusting.
Do you remember that, like, Mr. Snowman
frozen? I had one, yeah.
Did you have one of them as a kid?
Yeah.
So do you remember them?
Yeah.
Like a little frozen snowman thing, you put ice in the top and you pour the, like, a full liquid into it. And then twisted and a sort of little snow cone came out.
The problem with that was because
just coloured ice.
It was just coloured ice. We had a really strong freezer, so you had to, like, put the ice in and then you'd knock the head down to make the ice crush.
To crash it, yeah.
But as, like, a 10-year-old kid, it's very hard to do that. So my dad had to come and then just look like he'd killed the snowman. It was very sad. I found some really dangerous toys as well. I don't know if you know. For example, clackers got banned for a long time because they shattered and would hit shrapnel at children.
Oh, wow.
You know, clackers, the ones that are, like, on a string, like little like plastic balls.
Oh, and you swing them around, they hit each other. Yeah.
For a while, they got banned from playgrounds because they would just explode. And kids everywhere were, like, face full of clackers.
Amazing.
so to speak. Sky Rangers Park Flyer radio-controlled airplanes got banned because they kept exploding.
These are the thing, like, 50 of them exploded or something. Yeah.
They would fly up in the air. And this is, like, the 90s, so should be better.
Yeah.
We'll just keep exploding in children's faces. Again, shrapnel everywhere. Shrapnel's not a word.
But airborne shrapnel.
The best or worst kind, depending. I found out in the 50s you could get an atomic energy lab.
Yes.
With actual radioactive materials inside it.
Yeah, I've read about them.
And in the 20s there was Gilbert chemistry set as well.
That's the same company.
Is it?
Yeah,
they just didn't learn their lesson.
So the Gilbert U-238 atomic energy lab was this lab set that started on sale in the 50s, 1950. didn't last very long. They only sold about 5,000 copies of it. But it allowed, yeah, it allowed you to see chemical reactions of the atomic age. Retailed for about the equivalent of $500 now.
What?
So really pricey, like you posh white American kids.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
But yeah, you're right. included four samples of ore with actual uranium inside it. And they're like, no, it's perfectly safe. But the instructions did say users should not take ore samples out of their jars, for they tend to flake and crumble. And you're like, the one thing that kids are going to do is try and open the jars and get the little rocks out to see exactly what they're like. That's exactly what they're going to do.
Of course, if you've got a box of stuff, the first thing you do is open the stuff to look inside it.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course you are.
They also recommended that the best way to play with it would be to play hide and seek with a Geiger counter. So you'd hide the mineral sample somewhere, and at the end, yeah, they had a little battery powered Geiger counter, you'd wander around the room finding it.
To be fair, that would be very fun, but also radioactive. So, like, yeah. Don't do it. But I love that they made that to a toy. Like, yeah. This is how we teach the children of tomorrow. We give them radioactive material. Just let them go for gold. There was also the Snack Time Cabbage Patch Kids.
Oh, yeah.
Which you were meant to feed its own food. Like, it had the food there. But it would end up eating children's fingers and hair because the kids would just shove their hands in where they were feeding the doll.
They couldn't tell the difference between a plastic chip and a child's finger.
Yeah, so the doll would just keep on snacking until eventually they had to be pulled apart. But I had two main contenders for the worst toy. They're two really obvious ones, but one of them is... both of them I don't particularly like. Basically, I have a real big thing about Beanie Babies.
Great.
I have a personal vendetta against Beanie Babies. Because I find the story of Beanie Babies fascinating.
What's the story of them?
Oh, well, strap in.
Well, Anna, when you say story, do you mean backstory to the characters or story to how they got made?
But, well, we're going to... how they got made, the company themselves.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So do you know much about the Beanie Baby?
No, nothing at all.
So, like, My cousin had them, but I didn't know anything about them really.
They were massive. Yeah. In like late 90s, really, really big deal. They're invented by this guy called Ty Warner, who is a billionaire. He has made so much money. He basically invented them. First of all, they are cheap because he made sure they were only half stuffed and stuffed with really cheap pellets.
Yeah,
normally
yeah.
In a cuddly toy, you'd get kind of like proper like fluff. But yeah. he said it was a way that they could stand up on their own or do stuff on their own. But it wasn't. It was just a cheap way of doing it.
Yeah.
And also, in the 90s, they were so big. Have you seen that picture of people divorcing and separating their Beanie Babies in a court?
Oh, wow, no.
Because there was, you know, Beanie Babies were meant to be so expensive. Like, the idea was they were a collector's item. They would become a really, really big deal. So kids can play with them, but eventually they're going to be worth a lot of money.
Were they limited edition? That's why they had so many different ones, because they wanted each one to be slightly limited.
So what he did was he made sure that every shop they were given to, first of all, only small shops,
mm-hmm.
and he would give them like 12 of each bear.
Right.
So they'd become really rare, so people would be desperate to get them.
Yeah, yeah.
People would like have fights about it. And there was a thing that, like, at the beginning of the internet, this was like one of the big booms was Beanie Babies. And there's a point when 10% of all eBay sales were Beanie Babies.
Wow.
It blows my mind. There was
that's like that fact that like half the videos on YouTube are Minecraft videos that I can't believe is true.
Yeah, but probably that makes sense. So they
there's a whole other world we don't know about then.
They had originally, there were 9 dolls, and then eventually, I think he also was really clever. What he would do is he invented some other toys that were a bit rubbish, but he made sure that shops could only have the Beanie Babies if they took his other products as well. He's like an evil genius. So he eventually decided the end of Beanie Babies was going to happen. He had a bear called The End, which is like so creepy.
Jesus, I mean, that is a professional wrestling name.
They all have poems and stuff like that on them as well. They basically, he made Beanie Babies kind of irresistible because he made them really rare, really scarce. He made everybody want them because they were collector's items. He also included really creepy poems on a lot of them on the ear tags.
Oh, yeah.
So, for example, he would also... I've got so much to say, guys. They would do certain bears for different occasions or different events. So one of the most high-profile ones was the Princess Diana Memorial Bear.
Oh, my God.
Which was a purple bear. And it
which was originally going to be in one place and then they had to move it because it kept getting muddy.
And it, like, it was a weirdly rushed... Like, she died in
it
August.
It was weirdly rushed.
Is this some insider trading that we didn't know about?
It was a quick job, is what I should say.
Irresponsible speed, maybe.
Yeah.
So they...
Too soon?
No.
No, it's fine. It's been a good 20 years. So they made it in the December of that year.
Okay, so like a tasteful 4 months later.
Yeah, like really, really quick.
And in time for Christmas, noticeably.
Basically, yes. And they were meant to be kind of... you know, the really big collector's item, people said they'd be worth thousands of pounds. They're now worth about 25 quid.
Good.
That, to be honest. Wow. So there was one for a while you could get Peanuts, which is the elephant, for £3,000 on eBay because it was so rare. And like, just, these aren't toys anymore. These are like evil genius mechanisms.
Wow.
So there's one... 6,000 Beanie Babies got seized by the police because people were counterfeiting them and they were like the wrong kind of Beanie Babies. The FBI had open cases about Beanie Babies because there was so much fraud going on.
Bex, this is amazing.
Ty Warner is this evil genius who... if you go on their website, by the way, there's not much to see. He...
it's literally...
Nothing to see here. Nothing to see here.
It kind of is. He donates a lot of money to charity, but also, like I said, has been done for tax fraud. Nobody really knows much about him. He's very secretive. And all I know about him is he's had two girlfriends. And also, I once tried to get in touch with the Warner Corporation because I wanted some details about Beanie Babies. And I got the most, like, the most passive-aggressive, like, really incredibly rude email back from the company. And also I emailed a fan club from the Beanie Babies. And they are like a secret cult. They got really angry because they were like, we have a lot of people emailing about this, and actually I think you'll find that Beanie Babies are amazing, and we don't have to get involved with you because we don't have to defend ourselves again. And I was like, what have you been doing?
Oh my God, is this sort of like Jehovah's Witnesses Scientology Beanie Babies?
It really is, honestly.
You should have been on last week's recording with World's Worst Cult.
So they also had Beanie Babies to commemorate or to celebrate, not celebrate, breast cancer and AIDS. Like, just every kind of thing has a different Beanie Baby. And I've written down some of the poems.
Oh, yes, please.
So what? because also the poems are rubbish. And like, as a toy, as a kid, like, you want poems to be fun.
Uh-huh.
They're so phoned
Imagine
in.
Imagine being the poor copywriter who's like, can you bash out four lines, like...
About AIDS
that we're going to stick on a stuffed elephant.
Which can't even stand up because it's only half full. So
I had dreams of winning a Booker Prize.
So Waddles the duck, his poem goes like this. When I swim, I go really fast, but when I run, I'm usually last. That's it. That's literally it. The poem from The End, The Bear at the End, which is capital T, capital E, obviously. All good things come to an end. It's been fun for everyone. Peace and hope are never gone. Love you all and so long.
Oh, wow.
Which is so trite and rubbish and annoying. And it's just like, the end is not... That's not a thing. You can't make a bear to commemorate the end of something. And also, like, Warner, honestly, he's a clever man. And when he dies, not that I'm going to kill him, but when he dies...
Really?
There'll be a lot to say about him. So I think fundamentally the ethics of Beanie Babies I'm very annoyed at because I find it... bizarre that it's lasted and the boom. He's a billionaire from half-stuffed toys. Like, it just blows my mind.
I mean, those poems make Clint and Claude sound like Seamus Heaney.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, I feel like we found your nemesis, Bex.
A lot of people say, like, I bet you're too nice, like, blah, blah, blah. This is the thing that I get really cross
with.
The world of Beanie Babies. But the one I think I'm going to nominate.
They're not even your choice.
No.
What could be worse?
Because although I fundamentally find them so frustrating, I think I have to nominate, you know, it's more the ethics of the company.
Okay.
And more just the lack of thought and the, like, the ham-fisted emotional tugging of the heartstrings.
Ham-fist is a pig that's quite rare, actually.
His poem is amazing.
Yeah.
But this sounds really obvious, but it's not for obvious reasons. Barbie.
Oh.
Take it on the big hitters.
So I was never a big toy fan, a doll fan as a kid. I loved teddy bears. I had my own land called Teddy Bear Land in my in my house. And my friends would come and visit all the teddy bears.
Nice.
And that was a pretty big deal for me. So dolls were never a thing.
On state visits.
I would walk them around the arena.
Yeah, nice, very good.
Welcome to Teddy Bear Land. So I didn't really like dolls much, but I respect them and I understand them. And I totally get why you would have dolls. And Barbie, it's not the usual reason that I don't like Barbie people, you know, the kind of the body standard type thing. What I love about Barbie and Mattel is they try so hard to make her good. Like, they've really made such a big effort. But as toys go, they're such a big, big toy. They keep just doing the wrong thing all the time. So from, like, you've got the general one, Barbie Forever. She comes with a dog and a metal pooper scooper type thing. But kids kept eating the magnets. So they had to recall it because it was just dangerous. And also, the idea was the dog would poo out this poo, and then you would feed it back to the dog, and it would poo it back out again later.
You would feed your dog... I mean, to be fair, yeah. I'm not a dog owner, but that seems pretty accurate for the way dogs work.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. They have, like, loads of really weird ranges. They had the Haunted Beauty Mistress. They had...
So, someone who can give you haunted beauty or a woman who's actually haunted.
I think a bit of both. If you look online, she looks brilliant, but also, like, this, no kid was going to pick this one.
Christ, it's the Miss Havisham Barbie.
Yeah, basically. There was the Empress of the Aliens Barbie, who is, like, just bizarre, like Guardians of the Galaxy times about 1,000. And then they try so hard to make her relevant to the times. So you've got, oh, yeah, Haunted Beauty Ghost is the other one. Haunted Beauty Ghost, you've got Barbie. George Washington Barbie.
Does she come with her own apple tree?
She has an amazing hat and, like, a hot pink jacket that he would have worn had he worn pink. It's amazing. And it's like, they want to teach kids so bad, but they're also really bad at, like, picking their battles. There's Rappin' Rockin' Barbie.
Of course.
Who comes with a great rap from the 90s. And then there are times when it's just like, come on, Mattel, get it together. So you had Extremely Hungry Barbie, who is on a diet, and she goes to a sleepover, and the sleepover comes with weighing scales that she can weigh herself on.
Oh, no.
A set of seven stone.
No!
So it's like the kids would be like, oh, and Barbie's aiming there. I'll probably aim there as well.
Grim.
You've got Nip Tuck Barbie.
No!
When she became a plastic surgeon in 1973. No training. She just went straight in there. Why not?
I really hope this isn't ending with hashtag Me Too Barbie and she's there with her cover-up makeup.
Yeah. There was Wash and Watch Barbie, which is from 91, which is far too late, which is her, and she comes to the dishwasher, and the idea is she's just watching her dishes being washed, just having a nice time with the dishwasher.
Because nothing's on the telly.
Yeah, she's busy. Ken's away, so she might as well do that.
They're not together anymore.
Oh, well, there was Together Forever Barbie, which is them as Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
And it's like, that does not end well. Why do you want kids to know about...
Yeah, just call that Suicide Pact Barbie.
But they also officially broke up, I think, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it was in the papers.
Yeah.
See, she's got a new surfer boyfriend.
She's got someone on the go, that Barbie. There was Teen Talk Barbie, where stuff she said included, will we ever have enough clothes?
Oh, yes.
And also...
Sorry, I heard that as Teen Talk Barbie.
She delivers the Any Given Sunday.
The inches.
Teen Talk Barbie also says, math class is tough, which is true. Like, I found math very hard, so I would have appreciated that.
Yeah.
But the National Council of Teachers of Math did not appreciate that and put in a formal complaint to Mattel.
Yeah, of course.
There are a few that there's three or four in particular that I do. It's just this thing of the noble failure thing of, like, Mattel just trying so hard to make Barbie good. But there was the, the Oreo Barbie.
No.
So Mattel teamed up with the company who owned Oreos.
Yes.
And they had, both of your faces implying. No. Yeah. So they came up with a doll.
Yes.
Called the Oreo Fun Barbie.
Yes.
Which was a doll, but they didn't realise Oreo isn't a term, like an insult, basically, to explain to somebody who's maybe, I feel like I'm treading on...
Black on the outside and white on the inside.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's like being called... I think I've heard British Asian comedians being described as coconut. That's the
right.
Yes. Brown on the outside, white on the inside. Or what was it? I think it's Nish probably had it. I'm actually a Kinder Egg, so I'm brown on the outside and hollow in the inside.
I just
with
love
a toy.
With a toy. Yeah, that's Nish.
But it just went so far that nobody thought this through. And it got it got produced, but then they had to recall all of the unsold dolls because they were like, we can't put out Oreo Barbie, that is quite bad. So my two contenders to prove how... Oh, three contenders to prove how bad they were. There was Growing Up Skipper from 1975.
That's her friend, isn't it?
That's her friend, yeah. And they were like trying to make Barbie more young and relevant. So what they did was she was a kid, and if you twisted her arm, she would get taller and her boobs would grow.
What? That is not how puberty works. Because if it did, then I would have been pumping my right arm.
Weren't you?
The best thing about that is if you don't like how she looks then, you can just untwist her arm and she goes back to how she was.
The incredibly inflating and deflating woman.
So growing up, like, again, like Mattel trying to teach their kids about how growing up works, but not doing that in any way at all. There is also Share a Smile Becky, who is one of Barbie's other friends. Have you heard about her?
No, I just had an image in my head of it's basically a perfectly nice, normal, every woman, and she comes with two men in a white van who drive past going, give us a smile, love, give us a smile.
There probably is one of those, actually. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
Becky was their first kind of wheelchair accessible
doll.
So it's a girl who's a friend of Barbie's, comes in a wheelchair, and she was meant to be like a way to make you know, they knew that they needed to make an accessible doll and something more relevant to today, and they were so on it, and it was a real big fanfare. But they didn't realise, they didn't make the wheelchair properly, so it didn't fit in Barbie's dream house.
I was literally about to say, I bet the dream house isn't accessible.
Didn't go in the dream house or the elevator. So, like, they made this thing that didn't fit. Like, none of the things that she could play with were accessible. Which is...
That is too perfect.
And the final contender to prove, like, Barbie is pretty rubbish, but has tried so hard, is computer engineer Barbie, who...
One of her many jobs.
Yeah, she's, like, she's been a busy girl.
Yeah.
She... came with a little booklet. So she's got like a white coat on and she's, you know, she's a serious woman about town. She can she can do computers, guys. What they did, though, in the booklet was she infects the computers with a virus and she needs her two male friends, Brian and Steve, to come and fix the computers for her because she can't do it. Like, they tried to make it so it's like, Barbie can do anything, she can do anything a man can do, yeah. And it's like, oh no, but she can't, because Brian and Steve need to pop along as well.
Oh lord.
So I'm going to put Barbie out there as like, not for, and there's a lot of reasons people don't like Barbie, I respect her and I like her, but Mattel just keep not, they just keep missing the mark, and that is why I'm like, get it together. Come on, guys.
I've just brought up her BarbieMedia.com. She's had over 150 careers in the nearly 60 years she's been on our shelves, including registered nurse, rock star, veterinarian, aerobics instructor, pilot, police officer. She broke the plastic ceiling in the 1960s when, as an astronaut, she went to the moon 4 years before Neil Armstrong did. In the 1980s, she took to the boardroom as day-to-night CEO Barbie, when women began to break into the C-suite. And in the 1990s, she ran for president before any female candidate ever made it onto the ballot.
She's ahead of her time in other ways, yeah.
She ran for president but didn't get the job,
I suggest.
No, sadly not. There is a completely dedicated Wikipedia article to Barbie's careers, broken down into education, medicine, military.
Military? Where did she serve?
She's been an Army medic, a paratrooper, United States Army officer during Desert Storm, the United States Air Force pilot, United States Air Force Thunderbirds, Marine Corps, and a petty officer.
She's done a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm worried that she's committed war crimes in Basra, to be perfectly honest.
In 1992, she became a rapper.
My God, she's Marky Mark!
She's been a resort greeter at Disney's Caribbean Beach Resort. And a SeaWorld trainer. The worst of them all.
I can't wait for emotional breakdown, Barbie, when she's suffering from nervous exhaustion and PTSD.
She's done so many jobs and not trained for any of them, but hey, if she can get a free job, then good for her.
Yeah.
But I just love that they've tried so hard to make her accessible and to make her good for every generation, but keep failing.
I looked a little bit about the history of toys in general, first of all. The oldest toy, according to the National Toy Hall of Fame in the United States, is the stick.
No. No, it's not.
Yes, it is. They reckon there are probably clay balls that Neolithic and early primitive human sort of groups used, but they haven't found any yet. But they reckon the stick is the earliest surviving toy. In 2004, on the Italian island of Pantelleria, they discovered a 4,000-year-old stone doll's head. And they found dolls in various things, like in Egyptian tombs and things. But the reason this one is particularly important is it was found outside of, like, a ceremonial ground. It was just in a settlement. So whereas the dolls in the pyramids might be related to fertility and things like that, this one was buried, that was found with, like, miniature kitchenware, and it had curly hair. So they reckon that was one of the early examples of something that was actually being played with. The Indus Valley civilizations, which were sort of lasted from sort of 3000 to 1500 BC, they had toys including carts and whistles in the shape of birds, and a little monkey that you could slide down a string. It's quite advanced. But it's not until the Enlightenment in the 1700s that really toys in the West come out, because up until that point, children aren't really seen as people.
They are there to be worked.
Yeah. I mean, they're probably going to die, so they don't pay too much attention to them. But in 1767, the first jigsaw is invented by John Spilsbury.
Oh, I love a jigsaw.
Yeah, he gave sort of geographic themes, so there'd be like a Europe one, an America's one, and like an Ireland one, and a Wales one, and an England one. The first rocking horses emerged around the same time. And in the early 19th century, there was a huge craze for kaleidoscopes, guys. Hmm. Kaleidoscopes were the biggest thing in the world. They were invented by a guy called David Brewster, who was quite an eminent scientist. He was a member of the Royal Society. He's also credited with inventing, I think, the sea thermometer, like the thermometer to use at sea.
Okay.
But he was interested in kaleidoscopes because they had relevance to optics and symmetry and sort of huge concepts of the infinite, because with sort of, because they're made up, do you know how they're made?
Not a clue.
So they're, particularly in this era, they were made of just like bits of glass and beads and balls and ribbon in the end bit that you put behind sort of a very thin paper and you could twist it. So it's the light refracting through those, making all the interesting symmetrical patterns. And he, I think with like 20 pieces of broken glass and stuff in the end of one of these, it would take you something like 800 billion years or something to go through all the different combinations and patterns you could look at. So it's huge. Some people, some Victorians didn't like how random and how unimpressive the inside of the kaleidoscope was, by the way. But when they first emerged, he sold 200,000 in the first 3 months in London and Paris. They were huge.
That's massive.
Especially in Paris, knock back a couple of glasses of absinthe. Yeah. Yeah, he'll have a lovely old time with the kaleidoscope.
Yeah, he had to hire a new manufacturer to keep up with the demand. The original manufacturer just couldn't pump them out quickly enough. And they, he sadly didn't fill in his patent properly, so there were knockoff ones of it being made basically immediately.
Oh, it was the fidget spinner of the day.
It really was, right? Yeah.
There's an engraving by an artist called Charles Williams from 1818 of a street full of people just looking, like rich people, poor people, kids, old women, young men, people on carriages, all looking through them. And I think the title for it is something like Paying for Peeking, because you would have signs going a penny for a peek where people who owned a kaleidoscope would charge you a penny to look through
it. You could rent them out.
Yeah.
Like the Blockbuster video on its day.
Yeah, it was a huge... literally, it was like people wandering around looking at their iPhones all the time. There is an article from The Time with a line in it saying, every boy in the street studies his kaleidoscope, though he bumps his head against a wall. So people wandering around with their heads down like we do now with smartphones. It was amazing. And it was a multi-class toy. Like, even poorest people could afford it. Wealthy people could. Actually, the longer time went on, they then became sort of curiosities to have in homes with, like, elaborate stands and things. And they led to things like the zoetrope and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
But when they came out, they were huge. Amazing. And then within, like, a couple of decades, the craze had worn off somewhat. What else did I read about? I read about the origins of some toys. The Slinky was invented by a naval engineer in America when he dropped a tension spring and he saw how it reacted. He thought, oh, I think with the right tensile strength I could make this walk. And so he developed it, and his wife gave it the name Slinky because she discovered it meant graceful and sleek in Swedish.
Oh.
Yeah. That was in the 1940s. The yo-yo, there is a Greek vase from 440 BC with a painting on showing a Greek boy playing with a yo-yo even then. That's how old they are.
Wow.
I think the company that invented them gave them the name yo-yo officially didn't come around until the 1920s, but as far back as ancient Greece they were using them.
Wow.
And what else to read about? Do you remember aquedots?
Oh, that rings a bell.
They're little like plastic beads you could stick onto things to make patterns.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think you put them in water and they'd set them in place.
Yes. That sounds really familiar.
And they're still around, but I think they have a different name now because the original aquedots in the late 2000s were discovered to have GHB in them, which is a date rape drug.
Oh, God.
So children would put them in their mouths and swallow them and, like, fall into comas and things.
But I bet
like
the parents
that
were like, sweet, that kid is out of the cab. Go and have fun.
Yeah, so I did read about a few dangerous toys like that. In 2000, along the lines of the Atomic Energy Lab, in 2007, the CSI program released a fingerprint examination kit for kids to do their own dusting for fingerprints at home, released by the CBS Consumer Products arm of CBS.
And two plucky children caught the Zodiac Killer.
Sadly, no. They discovered instead that the powder included was 5% asbestos.
How do you discover that after you do it?
And they had nobody working in CSI actually
investigating it. Oh my God.
Amazing.
That's like a lawsuit just straight away waiting to happen.
Oh, the same year. Oh, they didn't even withdraw it.
What?
They were like, you've got it. And they were like, no, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. It took like pressure from like a lawsuit from somebody to make them withdraw it. They were like, it's coming up to Christmas, it's going to be a big seller. But the same year, 2007, this is all, like you say, far too recent for some of these things. 2007, the Hannah Montana pop star card game was discovered to contain 3,000 parts lead per million. Now, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that any toy has no more than 40 parts per million lead.
Or like none, probably, would be quite
good.
Yeah,
well, I mean, it's along with arsenic, I think lead is the most common sort of household toxin that you might find.
How do you get lead in a card game?
I know, trace amounts in the paint. Right, think, okay. Or something like that. But yeah, they're, whatever that is, 80 times more than there should be in there. It's a lot.
God.
I found some fun Japanese toys. As I think we all probably did in our reading. Totoki Bako, a toy from 2008 from Bandai. It was like a Tamagotchi. It was a little box that could sort of about the size of your palm. Plastic box with a little screen on it. And it was a pet that lived inside, a little pixelated pet. But the difference between this and a Tamagotchi is this box had a little hole in the side of it that you could stick a finger into. And then a pixelated finger would appear on the screen and you could poke your pet.
Oh, that's quite sweet, right? Then you could stroke it.
I don't know, it's a little bit creepy sticking your hole into a screen and then like a finger appearing on the screen and you're tickling this pet all of a sudden.
I guess that is a bit too virtual reality, kind of like, that could turn into a Black Mirror episode very easily.
Yeah. Well, if it's like one of those Cabbage Patch dolls inside of that bites your finger and you're like, can't get it out anymore. Bandai have a great track record for weird toys as well, because in the 1980s they sold a toy called God Jesus.
No!
Which is... And it's a robot with a crucifix, guys.
I'm listening.
I'm going to need one right now.
It's amazing. Little blue and white robot holding a cross in one hand. It kind of worked like a magic eight ball, where you just would ask it like, oh, will that girl marry me?
I mean, isn't that what people use Jesus for anyway?
Yeah, that's essentially it. Yeah. I don't know if God Jesus feels like a really bad translation. Like, maybe like all-knowing idol or something like that might have been better. But yeah. So I can't wait to see what Bandai do next. Before I come to my choice, I'm going to tell you about some of the most expensive toys in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You've mentioned Stief already. Stief in... Steve designed a Louis Vuitton bear.
No, oh.
Yeah. Oh, I can't stand this stuff.
But I can imagine exactly what that looks like straight away. I know what...
It's a bear in Louis Vuitton coat. I think it has a hat as well, and Louis Vuitton luggage. But it also had real fur for its fur.
Ooh.
And diamond and sapphire eyes. And it was sold at auction in Monaco in 2000 for $2.1 million.
That's more than I'll ever earn in my lifetime. That's for a bear.
Yeah, just as a hard and fast rule, I'm not a massive fan of class warfare because I am definitely part of the bourgeoisie and we are the bad guys. But if you buy a teddy bear for 2.1 million, your head should be swinging from a bridge by midnight.
You could also buy a $1.5 million Rubik's Cube. It's the masterpiece Rubik's Cube designed by the diamond cutter Fred Queller in 1995, which is the 15th anniversary of the invention of the Rubik's Cube. And each side contains about 185 carats of precious stones, rubies and emeralds and amethysts. And they're all mounted into 18 carat gold squares. And it's perfectly it works, it's completely functional.
Yeah, but you wouldn't want to, would you?
You wouldn't want to touch this.
No.
Also, I'm a little concerned. I've watched all of the Marvel movies and it sounds like someone's accidentally made a Tesseract.
Yeah. But it doesn't really work like normal Rubik's Cube where you can, like, pull the stickers off and put them on. Slowly extract ruby by ruby. In 2016, a gold rocking horse was designed by a Japanese jeweler called Ginza Tanaka. It's 24 karat gold. It weighs 26 kilos. And he invented it for the birth of the crown prince Hisuhito. And it was bought by Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Obviously, of course it was.
For $600,000 for Blue Ivy. And you mentioned Barbie. The most expensive Barbie you can get is Diamond Barbie. And she sold at auction in 2010 for $302,500.
Wow.
No wonder she had such a long career in the military. She's made out of fucking diamonds.
Yeah.
Bullets will bounce off her.
Well, she was designed by a designer called Stefano Canturi. And she's got like a black backless dress on. The main expense in the Barbie is the choker that she's wearing, which includes a 1-carat square cut pink diamond in the middle of it. Which the choker itself was worth $300,000, and the rest of the doll is about $2,500, according to how it sold at auction for $302,500.
Wow.
But it was in aid of breast cancer research. So that seems like a nicer
That's
way
the most
to use
noble one so far, right?
Yeah. But the most expensive toy in the world is a doll's house. And it's the $8.5 million Astolat Doll's House Castle. This is insane.
I bet it's bigger than my actual house.
It is. Well, it's got 29 rooms in it, first of all. It's 9 foot tall. It weighs about 800 pounds. It includes a gym, a swimming pool. It's got working fireplaces. It's got stained glass in it. 10,000 unique miniature bits of furniture and collectibles and unique works of art on the wall, like miniature oil paintings. Loads of the pieces inside are actual antiques. It's got a real functioning bar with tiny liquor bottles full of actual alcohol inside them. It's got an armory, a wine cellar, a music room, a wizard's tower with a telescope in it, a library which includes the world's smallest antique Bible. It's got a copper roof on it, and it's it was designed over the course of 13 years, 1974 to 87, by a woman called Elaine Deal. And it's on a scale of 1 to 12, so 1 inch to 12 inches. And it's called the Astolat Castle because that's the castle the Lady of Shalott lives in Tennyson's poem, The Lady of Shalott. It's amazing. I think it's in a private collection now, but occasionally it goes up very short times on display
who
in public places.
Who owns it?
I can't remember. Someone very rich.
Again, they're on the list.
But I'm going to tell you my world's worst toy, which is one of those, because I want to have one of those good old-fashioned toys from the 40s, which were so dangerous on the list. Because we've got creepy dolls, we've got classic icon,
yeah.
And I'm going to give you a toy from the 40s called the Austin Magic Pistol.
I'm already in.
So nowadays we've got Nerf guns, which can fire sort of fairly tame foam darts at each other. This could fire a ping pong ball about 70 feet.
Cool.
Using what it called magic crystals and water. So you'd open the back of it and you'd pour some magic crystals in. You could either spit in it or pour a couple of drops of water into the back and seal it. And then you plug the ping pong ball into the front and squeeze the trigger and it would fire it. The magic crystals are actually calcium carbide, which when you add water to it, it produces acetylene gas.
I don't know, what's acetylene? I know it's bad.
Really, like, it burns with a bright yellow flame, Ben, is what acetylene is. You use oxyacetylene to, like, cut open metal sheets and things like that.
Oh, God.
So when you fire this thing, and I have seen a video of a guy on YouTube firing it very unsafely without wearing gloves or glasses or any ear protectors, it produces this very impressive yellow fireball from the muzzle of this plastic red gun.
Plastic as well.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, as it pops this ping pong ball out. Also has sparks coming out of the breech at the back of it. Near where your wrist is.
Sure, yeah.
The reason not many of them actually survive is that a load of them exploded when they were being used.
Good, good.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, yeah. So I think they're... I think any toy that... obviously, air guns and BB guns and things dangerous enough, but any gun that actually gives children exploding chemicals to add into it.
I just love the thing that somebody's been like, this will be fine, just like a few more in there.
And it looks quite like future, like it's sort of made to look a bit like a ray gun, like red and yellow and stuff. Bang! And a huge yellow flame pouring out the front of it. And able to shoot a gun. Just, I imagine it. Because kids, you do this with, like, toy guns and Nerf guns. You point them at each other's face.
Yeah, you're right. But, I mean, kids would love it.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Seeing a thing that actually real life explodes, you'd be like, sweet, this is the best toy ever.
So, our candidates this week for the world's worst toys are Ben's suggestion of the creepy reborn dolls. Go Google them, guys. We've had a look at a picture. They are...
Oh, boy.
They are scary.
I am squirming just thinking about them.
If your child had come out looking like any of these, you would have thrown it out the hospital window.
Yeah, I sort of feel like, now I've been thinking about it, the people who get reborn dolls then clearly use them in satanic rituals.
Bex's suggestion of the big hitter and... constantly moving from job to job, Barbie. Who would hire her? Going, so tell me about how long you lasted your previous job. Well, for about 4 months I was a vet.
Before that I was president.
Yeah. I was a rapper for about 3 weeks. Can't hold a job down. And my suggestion of the actual gun, an Austin Magic Pistol. Excellent, excellent choice of rounds. So we've got creepy, we've got icon, and we've got dangerous. Three of the five Spice Girls in the alternate universe. It's really hard to choose, but I think we haven't... You know the way when we went for World's Worst Board Game?
Yeah.
We just had to go with the one that was like the one that ruins games for everybody else. We went for Monopoly.
Oh, right, wow.
I kind of feel like Barbie is the world's worst toys Monopoly, where she's been everything to everybody and yet so many spectacular failures, noble in her ideals at times.
We don't really know the real Barbie, do we?
We don't, can't ever see past her.
I sort of feel like we need, because Barbie is a very iconically female toy, and I sort of feel like we need a case for Action Man or G.I. Joe instead. But I feel like Action Man and G.I. Joe, they're very limited in their scope and they do what they're meant to. Yeah. I mean, clearly they've both committed horrendous war crimes, but that's not part of the backstory. But yeah, like you say, with Barbie, they've really tried to make her a modern woman and they've just fudged it every goddamn time.
It's not that she's necessarily evil.
No.
It's just like we love on the show someone who tries and really fails.
That's kind of what it is. That's what it's going for with her.
And she's God's trier.
Yes. Could I suggest a Barbie but made by a reborn doll making person?
Oh, I bet there's one in there with a tiny waist and massive boobs if you go looking for it. So congratulations to Barbie.
Oh, did I win?
You won.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Let's see how long she can hold down this title for before she moves on to, you know, the No Such Thing as a Fish podcast. Just constantly moving from podcast to podcast. Before we go, I've got to give you the world's worst news of the week, and this comes from The Guardian. 67-year-old John Turmel is running for mayor of Brantford in Canada. It's a city of about 90,000 people. It is his 96th attempt at running for political office. He is the world's biggest political loser. He has never, ever won election to anything in his nearly 40 years now of trying. He's been running for various things since 1979, everything from city councilman to MP. He first ran to try and legalise gambling because he'd been sort of caught up in an illegal gambling game, and he went, well, the best thing for me to do is I'll run for office and change the law to make it legal for me to be playing these underground poker games.
What a legend.
He's also added to his manifesto over the years legalising prostitution and drugs, and his big idea is a sort of a gentle idea, a gentle capitalism where people trade not money necessarily but also time. He has this idea of time banks where you trade your skills as a currency, which you know, that's not a bad idea necessarily. He has in his time garnered everything from 11 to 4,500 votes in his 95 elections up to now, and now he's given up really campaigning. He doesn't really campaign anymore. He just releases a press release, holds a press conference, and then doesn't go door to door. Just says, I'm running. If anyone wants to vote for me, they can. He does occasionally show up at debates, even if he's not been invited to them. And his interview is quite sweet. He says, I'm doing my civic duty. I've done my best. That's all that can be expected of me. And he says, I have no regrets. All of my elections have been funded by my games, largely illegal poker games. hey, I've done the best I can with it.
He is the candidate for this podcast.
Absolutely. So well done, John Turmel, for trying nearly as hard as Barbie. Bex, before we go, where can people find out more about you and what you're doing?
I think Twitter, probably the best place. My handle is at BexLindsay. That is BexLindsay. That's probably the best place, yeah.
Excellent. Meanwhile, we're all about to peek through Ben's kaleidoscope. Join us next week on Worst of Forward. Goodbye.
Oh, Barbie.
Okay.
Poor old Barbie. She's just a Barbie girl in a Barbie world, and yet here we are. We've taken her down a peg.
We have.
The dream house has turned into a nightmare.
I read a thing yesterday, though, about they've just released a Doctor Who Barbie.
Have they?
Yeah, her dressed in Jodie Whittaker's outfit.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that feels like a bit of redemption for Barbie.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, we're not quite putting her in the same toy box as Monopoly.
No. Also, like, Barbie regenerates more than Doctor Who, so that seems appropriate.
How many hearts does Barbie have?
None. She had it surgically removed to stay that young for 50 years.
The only way she can stay upright with no organs inside her. Thanks so much to Bex for coming on to the show. If you've got kids, do get them to give her a listen. She's probably much more polite than some of the stuff we talked about today. Yep. But yeah, we had a lovely time and so many shit toys. I mean, those guns that actually fired fire at them, and the really creepy reborn dolls.
Super creepy dolls. I might have spoken about this before, but one of my comedy New Year's resolutions, the comedy year begins in September after Edinburgh, is to actually start sticking some show notes on our website and flesh it out. When I get to it, I will put up links to those creepy babies that you should look out for. They are worth 5 minutes of your time if you can cope with the 3 weeks of nightmares afterwards.
You heard it here first, folks. Look out for those creepy babies. They could be anywhere.
As ever, there's all sorts of lovely, useful things you can do to help the podcast out. Most of all, if you fancy donating to us on Patreon, that'd be very, very welcome. Not least because we are very, very close to reaching our next target of 25 Patreon supporters.
Indeed,
when we
do
hit that, we will begin releasing an extra exclusive episode a month. I say exclusive, everyone can hear it, but it's a good sounding advertising word.
Yes.
Where we will focus on specific people, both good and bad, that we've spoken about on previous shows.
Already many of our Patreon subscribers are getting secret bonus content each month. This month's one is really fun. So if you fancy dropping us a couple of quid, you will be already reaping the benefits of doing so. And that you can go to patreon.com/worstwoodforward to find out all the little rewards that are on offer and our targets as we hit them, what we want to do with the show going forward.
Yeah, as ever, you can follow me on Twitter on @BenVanderveld, him on @BazMaxDay, the podcast on @Worst. Foot.
What's the name of the show again? Where are we? What year is this?
And why not? I'll lob it in my comedy club on @GoodShipComedy. And if you fancy emailing us, it's worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com.
Our episode next week is with the fabulous Aidan Goatley, a comedian, a good friend of Ben's, because I've gigged with you quite a lot, podcaster as well. And we travelled all the way down to deepest, darkest Brighton to interview him to talk about the world's worst tattoo. There are personal confessions, there are political statements, and there's the downright weird and creepy. So tune in next week to hear us go under the needle.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @Podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.